First up this afternoon, we have a missing teen in Orange County. 17-year-old Joshua Corona was last seen by his parents last night at 11 p.m. They then discovered him missing this morning. They think he may be in the area of Joppa Oaks off of North Carolina 86 near the Hampton Point Shopping Center. He's described as 6 feet tall with a thin build. You can find a picture of him and more details by visiting chapelboro.com. We also have an update now on the automobile accident from last week that killed two local business owners. Dhruva and Chris Shalani, father-son owners of Classic Carolina on Franklin Street, died on Wednesday night. North Carolina State Highway Patrol shared details with Chapelboro earlier today. Chris Shalani was driving his parents north on North Carolina 751 near Clyde Farrell Road in Chatham County when 45-year-old Jason Fry of Apex was traveling south on the road in an SUV. He crossed the center line and struck Shalani head-on. Chris and Dhruva died on the scene, according to the State Highway Patrol. Dhruva was 61 years old. Chris was 24. Fry, the driver of the SUV, is in critical condition and may still face charges. You can find more details, including a link to the GoFundMe page to help support the family, in the news article on chapelboro.com. Turning to local government meetings now, the Carrboro Town Council meets tonight at 7 o'clock for a work session. They've got two issues on the agenda dealing with transportation. One is street connectivity and connector roads. The other is traffic calming in residential neighborhoods. The Orange County Commissioners also meet tonight at 7 o'clock. They'll hear the results of a survey on the county's strategic plan and hear from a consultant on the county's comprehensive land use plan. Keeping it with local government now, in August, the town of Chapel Hill's proposed Tanyard Branch Trace development was selected to receive a highly competitive low-income housing tax credit award. Not many of these awarded, and this was the only project in Orange County that got it. The plan is to build the 48-unit affordable rental community on town-owned land located on J Street. The development will connect directly with the Tanyard Branch Trail. Chapel Hill Mayor Pam Heminger spoke about the development with 97.9 The Hill last week.
Very exciting. They got the LIHTC, the Low Income Tax Housing Tax Credit Award. So they got the grant to get that project out of the ground. So we're very excited. These grants are really competitive. Chapel Hill's been very fortunate to have good projects and have gotten a grant the last 3 years in a row. There's only a handful that go out across the entire state. So we're really, really pleased about this. It will move forward now, which is very exciting. And so we're pleased that this is going to be taking off to provide more affordable housing for folks in a walkable environment, and a really great location for people, but also just an opportunity to create just so much more needed affordable housing in our community.
Chapel Hill Mayor Pam Heminger speaking there. You can find that full conversation in the News on the Hill section of chapelboro.com. We'll be looking more detailed at the weather in just a few minutes, but we did get up to 90 degrees earlier today, and the forecast says that may be the last 90-degree day that we have. It's the last one predicted in the current 10-day forecast, but that doesn't change the fact that we just went through the hottest summer on record. Global warming continues to be an ongoing issue for both North Carolina and the world in general. These past few months, the Northern Hemisphere suffered through steamy humidity and burning heat. Over at Duke, the Nicholas Institute for the Environment has one expert working to help the government change its preparation and response to extreme heat. 97.9 The Hill's Reagan Allen has more.
Ashley Ward works on the impacts of climate extremes, community action, and resilience against it. As a part of a climate commitment, the Nicholas Institute recently asked faculty to give ideas to help prioritize climate in everything they do. Ward pitched the Heat Policy Innovation Hub, which launched at the university in July.
How can we, in our role, protect the people that we serve or help them protect themselves? But what we haven't been able to do is to take those lessons from science with the insights from communities who were on the front lines of this issue and take the two of them to generate innovative policy solutions around the topic of heat. And so the purpose of the Policy Innovation Hub is to do that work.
The Hub is the first program in the U.S. dedicated to cross-innovation on extreme heat policy and practice, according to the Nicholas Institute. Ward says extreme heat impacts individuals the most, so it makes sense to get their feedback as a part of any local action.
Planning and really building out the capacity and capability at the local level is a real short-term win and one that has a lot of impact. And we're not talking about 3 to 5 days of extreme heat in some areas of the country. We're talking about sustained weeks of extreme and dangerous heat. And that's a different kind of response than, say, these short-lived events.
Based in North Carolina, a lot of wards work studies local legislature and action against rising temperatures. Because of that, she and the Nicholas Institute have helped the state set an example on how to approach addressing climate extremes.
I want to be clear that North Carolina, in my opinion, is one of the leaders in this space in the country. So North Carolina is the only state that has a hazard mitigation plan for every county in the state. In most states, those plans, counties refer to the state level plan, or you might have a municipality who has their own plan. But in North Carolina, every county has one.
Wirtz says she's been working with the Office of Recovery and Resilience, Department of Health and Human Services, and Climate Office to develop a heat action plan for counties to use. So far, she says 10 counties are testing it out.
This is a critical first step because when you write it into your plans and you have it as part of your formalized planning structure, it means not only that people know what to do and when an event is approaching, but that in the off season and other times, resources are allocated toward it.
Beyond North Carolina, even President Joe Biden's administration is taking steps to mitigate the harmful impacts of extreme heat. According to the UN Weather Agency, there is a 98% chance of breaking the 2016 average temperature record across the year between now and 2027. This year so far is the second hottest year on record since 2016, according to the European Climate Service, Copernicus.
It was great to see President Biden elevate the topic of heat to the presidential podium in that address last month. One of the things that this administration has done effectively is to push they have a heat working group in the White House, which had representation from, you know, all over the federal government, including FEMA.
Wirtz says she wants more worker protection for those exposed to the heat. Just this August, temperatures rose 1.5 degrees Celsius higher than pre-industrial times.
We have a lot of structure and infrastructure that needs to be modernized about this. Schools that need air conditioning and cooling system, prisons that need the same, public housing. These are enormously expensive.
Because unhoused populations are at greater risk, Ward says she would like to see more shelters available for them specifically. She adds that she will continue working to make the local level more equipped to handle rising temperatures.
We're working very closely with our community partners to help develop what those projects look like and secure the funding so that we can carry forward with that work.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Reagan Allen.
Thank you, Reagan. You can find a print version of that story by visiting chapelboro.com. Time now to talk sports. And we'll start that sports conversation with some pretty exciting football news. Still basking in the glow of being 2-0 to start the season, even if it did come in kind of a nail-biting fashion against Appalachian State on Saturday. Somebody who wasn't biting nails at all was running back Omarion Hampton. He had his career best performance on Saturday, rushing for 234 yards and 3 touchdowns. That earned him not only ACC Running Back of the Week on Monday, but earlier today he was named National Running Back of the Week by the Doak Walker Award. So congratulations on a huge day for Omarion Hampton. And somebody who is particularly happy about that was UNC offensive coordinator Chip Lindsey. Here's what he had to say about Hampton's performance after the game.
The first run of the game, if you go back and look at that, there was a guy there. They had kind of brought the safety down, had an extra guy there, which we thought it might be a possibility, but, you know, he just lowered his head and got his pads low and kind of ran through that guy. The guy made a tackle for 7 or 8 yards, and I think that set the tone, you know, and that's what we want. We want to be physical and downhill, and the more we can run the ball and be effective, the more opportunities we're going to have down the field with Drake and our wideouts and so forth. So I think that was a good one. But if you go back and watch all of his runs, he did a great job of making a decision. One power, I remember he went backside on it. Yep. Okay, that's great with using his vision. But all of his runs, he really didn't stop his feet much. And that's a testament to the O-line, too. And he got downhill, and that's what you want. You want guys that'll get vertical and make one cut. And really, he did that. And he also protected the ball, carrying it that many times. Did a great job protecting the ball as well.
UNC offensive coordinator Chip Lindsey speaking there on running back Omarion Hampton's performance last Saturday. For more coverage of UNC football, you can go to our sports section on chapelboro.com. Also got some other awards that were given out, namely Avery Patterson from the women's soccer team, named ACC Player of the Week. Congratulations to her. I'm guessing that's not going to be the last time she nets that award this season. Also got some news from the basketball team. This is pretty exciting. We've got a couple of dates to circle on the calendar. Media Day will be Friday, October 6th. Now, it's not open to the public, but that is when we start to learn more about the team, start to get some of those stories out there, and start to figure out kind of what the team looks like, at least on paper, according to the coaches and those involved. 1 week from that day, on Friday the 13th of October, it will be live action with Carolina basketball. Don't have all the details on that event yet, but we do know it's going to be Friday, October 13th. You can find what details we do know in the news article in the sports section of chapelboro.com. Elsewhere in sports, the schedule's out for swimming and diving as they get ready for the coming season. They'll open up September 29th at Queen's University in Charlotte. You can find that full schedule at goheels.com. Durham Bulls have their last six home games of the year starting tonight. We'll be facing off against the Louisville Riverbats at 6:35. Bulls go into the series with a two-game division lead and 12 games remaining in the season.